Okay, today is December 17th, and we're closing out with today a series on narratives of Sefer Bereishis that impact the halacha. We've discussed a number of issues in inheritance laws and living in Israel, and it's an adjunct to that last issue of Medrash that we touched upon in the very beginning of this series, a Medrash that says that Hashem told Avraham, Lech Lecha, I am giving you a dispensation to leave your father's home to go to Israel. Now there are, must admittedly, other drushes of what that Lecha means. Rashi says the Lecha means it's good for you, go, it's going to be good for you. Right? But this Medrash is a different drash of the word Lecha. It's darshaning that you have a dispensation to leave your father's house in order to go to Israel. The implication of that is that other people would not have permission to move to Israel if doing so flies in the face of one's parents' wishes.
That's not true now, though.
We'll see. We'll see.
So it's divided,
okay.
I think.
We'll see. So by a Medrash saying, Avraham, leave your father's house, leave your place of your birth, Lecha, this is a dispensation for you. I'm not saying that this is a compelling or even necessary or compelling explanation of the word Lecha. There are plenty of others, but this is one of them. And in fact, Rashi is concerned with this apparently in Pshat when he asks why the Torah kills off Terach in Parshas Noach, right? When Terach lives into Parshas Chayesara, chronologically, right? Terach lived past Yitzchak's birth. Terach lived 210 years.
Because they say they waited till Terach died before they had the flood. That's the commentary.
No, that's they're thinking of Lamech.
Oh, okay.
So that's Avram doesn't look bad in respect to Kibbutz. Okay.
So that Avram does not look bad that he goes in all the parshas Lech Lecha here that he is leaving his father's house. To the reader's eye, it looks. It says Vayomas Terach in Noach, and only then does Avram go to Israel. But in reality, this is Rashi's pshat. In reality,
he left
Terach alive. Now,
so Rabbi, if you say that mitzvah,
okay, that's going to be the debate. Okay, so remember, of course, this is before Matan Torah, but it's still a medrash. The medrash first is trying to explain what the lecha is about. This interpretation is given for the extra lecha, and therefore it would appear that others who don't have this dispensation, like Avraham had, right, should not leave Israel if doing so flies in the face of parents' wishes. So this is a dispute amongst modern poskim, and I'm going to show what this possibly relates to Parshas Vayishlach. In Vayishlach, it says that although Avraham, although Yaakov received divine favor and promise for a bright future and protection, nonetheless, when Yaakov runs into problems, he sees that he prepares for all kinds of exigencies. He prepares for battle, he prepares for diplomacy, he prays, he does all the things that we need to do in case of such an emergency. And some of Farshim, like Ramban and Rashbam, wonder, Yaakov, you just had a promise from God. Why are you so being so subservient to Esav? Rely on God's promise here. Ramban actually uses that as an explanation for how subservient we have to be now in the Middle Ages to the Christians. Mm-hmm. Because Yaakov gave back the bracha that was given to him. There's no doubt that in Vayishlach, Yaakov is trying to show Esav, the bracha hasn't done me any good. Not one part of it has come true. Mm-hmm. Rashi says this explicitly.
Rashi says that we should be subservient?
Rashi just says that Yaakov was trying to show Esav in Parshas Vayishlach that the bracha that I took from you, for which you wanted to kill me 20 plus years ago, has not come true. The bracha hasn't done me any good. You can have it back. Kachna is bircha siya shehuvaslach. In other words, he's doing this in order to save himself. He's afraid that Esav is coming to meet him with 400 men to kill mother and child. Right? Emal banim. So Yaakov is held up for responsibility by Ramban. And Rashbam also says, I don't understand, why didn't he just rely on the promise God just made him at the end of Parshas Vayitzeh?
But we have to do the Gemara,
right, the Gemara says that it was Shema Yigrom Achet, lest he not deserve it. You know, the pasuk where he says, Katonti Mikol HaChasodim, right, is the eighth pasuk of the eighth Parsha, so that's that the Gemara in Sota says you should have an eighth of pride. So Yaakov had no pride. I don't deserve this, God, after all I experienced here. So
how does that work? But nevertheless, it's culpable, even though he's a Shana Batani, and that was...
But even that's a problem, because when God makes a promise for good, it happens.
Yeah, we can't go back on it.
No, you can only undo a promise for bad, but you can't undo a promise for good. So Yaakov either maybe didn't know that Rambam, or he still felt that as much as God promised, maybe the promise was contingent on something I didn't keep or something like that, right? I mean, you could ask the same question. We know when Moshe tells Bnei Israel on the very first day he speaks to all of them after his mission is solidified. He says, and I'm going to take you to the land of Israel. So the Mefarshim ask, so all the Meraglim and all the sins in the world shouldn't have undone that promise. It was a public promise. Right? So the Orach Chaim says that if you look, when it says, those one after the other, but in between those four and Vehevesi is another pasuk. It says, and you will know that I took you out of Egypt. So the behavior of Bnei Israel in the desert indicated that they did not incorporate that knowledge into their deeds. So Yaakov is afraid that maybe there's something like that in my past for which I will not deserve this. Okay,
well,
fair enough.
Can you clarify which promise he's talking about in terms of his father's blessing? Because there was an offering. That originally when he got it from Esau, he took the ability to offer the sacrifice. That's what Esau first did.
That's Rashi. That's Rashi's interpretation.
Didn't he get a bracha for wealth? He is wealthy. He's leaving Levin's house wealthy.
Okay, but the wealth does not manifest itself in Tal HaShemayim and Shemaneh Aretz. Animals are neither. I don't have Rov Dagon V'Sirosh. The wealth is supposed to be something that the ground produces.
Or like a stable home.
And especially, like yes, okay. I'm wondering. You're the one living here, but that's what I want to get to right now. Is and plus, who's bowing to whom? The bracha said I should that your brother should bow to you. So it's very clear that Yaakov wants to show the bracha hasn't come. When he prepares the gift, he calls it the bracha. Kachna es berchosi asher uvaslach. Take the bracha back. It hasn't done me any good. So that the story ends well. According to Rashi, he meant to kill him, but Esav was calmed by Yaakov's gift and his servile behavior.
Wasn't Yitzchak still alive?
Yes.
That's why he didn't kill him.
Okay.
He was very makbid on Kibbutz Av.
He said, I'm not going to kill him as long as Yitzchak's alive. In fact, that's why the Choshor says that Yaakov, it says, Vayira Vayetzelo. Rashi says, Vayira, he may get killed, Vayetzelo, he may have to kill. According to Bechoshor, it's Vayira Vayitzelo. I'm afraid I'm going to get killed. If he's coming out to meet me to kill me,
that means my father's dead.
My father's not alive.
But there is a debate whether he is. Even though he appears when Yosef goes down to Egypt, they say, that he's still
Yitzchak
alive.
Yitzchak is alive. Yitzchak is 180 years old when he dies, and he's alive. He's alive at this time. When Yaakov returns to Israel, it's within 180 years of his birth, so he's definitely
That could also
alive.
Be why Yaakov decided, I want to go back before my parents are both gone.
Right, his mother was gone already by this time. Be that as it may, here's what I want to say, is that there are two opinions over why Yaakov feels so unsure of himself. He says, I have not had the schus, it's very important to use that word, I have not had the schus, the benefit, the merit of two mitzvahs that Esav has had all these years. And they're connected to the thing about Abraham.
And Yishuv
Ha'ar. Right. Living in Israel and honoring my parents.
So you're trying to say those two go against everything that I'm doing?
Yes, whatever I've done, I don't have the schus of Esav, who's been doing Kibbutz Av. He's bringing my father food all these years. And he's been living in Israel. So that's a key thing. The zechut, he says. He has the zechut of living in Israel and of honoring my parents. So I understand how honoring parents is a zechut. It's a great merit, a great privilege. What's the privilege and merit of living in Israel is...
There are mitzvot atzliyot ba'aretz.
So now let's get that. So this is now, of course, it's before Matan Torah, but let's get to the crux of this discussion. Is that, and it's actually something I did this morning, so I'll tie it all together. It's something I talked about this morning.
It was on the daf?
It wasn't in the daf, but it's a Dvar Torah I gave in Shul.
Okay.
Is that there's two types of mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah called a mitzvah chiyuvis.
Oh, you talked about this on Shabbos.
And a mitzvah kiyumis. Mitzvah chiyuvis means that we have to go out and do this. You have to make sure that you do this. Every day you have to do this mitzvah chiyuvis. Right?
Okay.
Now, many mitzvahs are not mitzvah chiyuvis, they're mitzvah kiyumis.
If it arises, do the mitzvah.
Right? So, if someone fails to do a mitzvah chiyuvis, he's doing an avera. Right? Eating matzah on Pesach is a mitzvah chiyuvis. You have to go out and eat matzah.
You have to go out and find it.
To find matzah to eat. Maror is a mitzvah chiyuvis. You got to find maror to eat. For minim on sukkah is mitzvah chiyuvis.
Eating in a sukkah?
Eating in the sukkah, maybe not. If someone is wandering and traveling all through sukkahs and doesn't have a chance to get
because they're wandering
to get to a place, but that's debatable. But in the stomach, you have to sleep. You have to go. You have to sleep someplace to sleep. Find a sukkah to sleep in. But here's another example of a house would be if you go your whole lifetime without putting a fence around your roof. The Torah says that you should make sure that your roof is safe. It's called a me'akeh. Right. If you go your whole life without putting up a ma'akeh, you didn't violate the Torah because if you don't have a roof, if you don't have a house,
you don't own the house, you don't have a roof.
Right.
You
don't have an apartment.
Have to put up the fence.
So some people like to purposely go out and make a mitzvah. Right. If you never sent away a mother bird,
shiluch hakain,
you're not doing an avera. Right. I happen to have once did the mitzvah, but you're not doing an avera. And if you don't put up a mezuzah, you're not doing an avera. If you don't live in a house with a doorpost, right?
If you live in a cave,
tzitzis is a mitzvah kiyumis. If it has four corners, then you put tzitzis on. All right. I think we might have discussed this.
Hasn't it switched for men?
Yes, we obligate ourselves, but it's still a mitzvah kiyumis. This is what I discussed this morning. Oh. Is that
all men wear tzitzis?
But it's still a mitzvah chiyuvis. If a man doesn't put on tefillin, he's violating mitzvah chiyuvis. If he doesn't put on tzitzis, he's violating the mitzvah chiyuvis. So here's the machlokas. In other words, if you don't clean your house for Pesach, you're not violating a mitzvah chiyuvis. There's no chiyuv to clean your house for Pesach. The mitzvah, the chiyuv is to live in a house that doesn't have chametz in it. So if you never brought chametz into your house, you don't have a mitzvah to clean it.
Less people move before Pesach.
No, seriously, some people, if you move 2 months before Pesach, there's no chametz in it. You never brought chametz in it. You don't have a mitzvah to clean it.
Actually, sounds much easier than cleaning, just never bringing it in.
Okay. So the answer is that there are two different types of mitzvahs. Now, this is a machlokas about living in Israel. According to the Rambam, living in Israel is not a mitzvah chiyuvis, it's a mitzvah kiyumis. It helps you mekayim many other mitzvahs.
But if
he doesn't count it in the 613 mitzvahs to live in Israel. The Ramban does. The Ramban was very, very much against this opinion. He says, what are you talking about? It's a mitzvah for conquest of the land of Israel and to live there. And the Rambam says, no, it's only a mitzvah to do those things so that you can keep Shemitah, so that you can give Trumas and Maisers, so that you can keep Yovel. So that's the Machlokas, Rambam and the Ramban.
So these days when it's like not really impossible to move there, you know,
okay. Yeah.
But there's a whole debate.
The Rambam himself made his way to Israel at the end of his life.
Right.
No, but today you can have a whole debate. Why is someone?
As did the Ramban.
He was forced a little bit.
No, but as the Ramban, yes.
But today there's a whole debate. Easier, let's say someone wants to make aliyah, but their parents are vehemently against it. Kibbutz Avaim is definitely a chiv.
Kibbutz Avaim is definitely a chiv. So that's machlokas. Reb Moshe Feinstein, who paskins like the Rambam, said, if your parents mitzvah chiyuvis, living in Israel mitzvah chiyumis, so if your parents say you will be violating my opinion if you, violating my will if you move to Israel, It's dangerous there. I'll be worried about you. Whatever it is, I want you here with
me. I need you to take care of me.
You should take care of me. Whatever it is. I'm not talking about the relative judicious nature of the parent behaving this way. I'm not talking about that. The halacha is that if a parent says, I'm taking your wallet, I'm throwing it in the Hudson, you're not allowed. You have to. That's the example the Gemara gives of you're not allowed to be angry with them. You can be angry with them. You can't throw it off a bridge. So Lemaisa, so if the parent, you have to balance listening to a mitzvah kiyumis and observing a mitzvah kiyumis and observing a mitzvah chiyuvis, so the mitzvah chiyuvis prevails, right? I don't know if the case was, if you go to Israel, I'm not giving you money to help you do it. You know, a parent has all kinds of mechanisms with which to convince the child that you should listen to me, right? But the Rav Avadia Yosef disagreed. He said that it's a mitzvah chiyuvis to live in Israel. And then something else kicks in. It says, Ishimova aviv tirau, ves shepso zeti shmoru.
You're allowed to violate Kibbutz Avayim for Shmir Shabbos.
Any mitzvah, not just Shmir Shabbos, but any mitzvah.
Any mitzvah.
If a parent tells you,
according to Ovadia Yosef.
Yeah, parents, we have a mitzvah. No, according to the Gemara.
Oh.
The question is this a mitzvah that follows? So we'll see that there's a whole hierarchy of mitzvahs for which this follows and which it doesn't follow.
Absolutely, not all mitzvahs.
Well, obviously, if your parent tells you to steal, you shouldn't steal.
Okay, that's violating the Torah.
There's a lot of parents right now who object to you being religious. Object to
here you go.
Israel, tons. Yeah. I have Absolutely. That personal experience. And my mom originally took my social security card originally and everything, so I couldn't get my passport back when I was in my 20s.
So here is the debate. Forget about mitzvah chiyuvis. What happens if a parent says, "Listen, the whole family is going out to a restaurant, and we're getting chicken and milk, chicken and cheese is not violating the Torah. It's just meat and cheese. It's rabbinic. So listen to me. Well, you can listen to the rabbis or the violation of your parents. So, but if the chicken's nevela, then there's a separate problem. But the point is that we're supposed to obey even the drabon, even a minhag. The parents shouldn't tell you, well, I know you had meat an hour ago, but it's only a minhag not to eat milk after meat.
So your parents shouldn't eat
it's only a drabon. No, you're not supposed to. It says Yishimova Vivti Ro means that you know, if they're telling you to outright violate a halacha, the parent isn't saying to the child, according to Rav Moshe, I want you to violate halacha by not living in Israel. If the child says, listen, I'm convinced, I heard a shir, and I'm convinced it's a mitzvah to live in Israel. It's a mitzvah chiyuvis. And you're telling me to violate a mitzvah. So Ravadi Yosef Paskin, a parent is not allowed to tell a child to violate a mitzvah. The child does not have to listen to that. Right? By the way, this is interesting. There's one other area of halacha where a parent is not allowed to tell a child is if the child wants to marry someone. Right? And the parent doesn't approve, the child does not have to listen to the parent about that.
That's all the time. Parents tell that.
Okay, I understand. The parent, again, has certain mechanisms with which if they really want to, you know, stay firm to this, they'll just say, okay, I'm not coming to the wedding, I'm not going to pay for the wedding. Right? So that's awful, but I'm just saying.
So that's interesting. It happens all the time.
Of course, I know it happens all the time. I've never seen it. Okay, so here's what I want to get at. When Yaakov in the Medrash, you know, I'm not even interested in if this Medrash reflects reality or not. When Yaakov in the Medrash says, I'm worried about returning home because Esav has the zchus of living in Israel, right?
And
the zchus of honoring my parents, and I don't, right? So Rav Avadia Yosef proves from this Medrash that living in Israel must be a mitzvah. Why? A mitzvah chiyuvis, because I'll end the discussion with this.
He's putting his life in danger to come back.
There's a Gemara in the Sechas Sota that says that there's brewed coffee there if you'd like. So there's another Gemara that says that a zechut only applies for a chiyuv, not for a minhag or a chiyuv. It has to only a chiyuv. So Rav Avadia Yosef very cleverly used this Gemara with this Medrash to prove what that the child does not have to listen to such a command. All right. Okay. So keep with Avraham. Back to Avraham. That the Torah kills off Terach, you know, before he actually dies, in order that Avram shouldn't look bad. So the message to the parent, you know, the parent has all kinds of reasons why they'll tell a child something. I think it's wise for a parent after a certain age to say, listen, I'm only giving you my advice. In the end, you know, you have to do what you feel is you're an adult now. I shot the arrow already. You're on your way to your targets, and you have to make it on your own. So
you should also show support just in case you were the right one and they need to come back to you. If you don't show them support, then they feel like deserted.
Well, this is
in case they made a mistake.
No good parents.
If you were here at Chalashudas, yesterday, you know that this is exactly what was going on. Now, I'll tell you the truth. If I'm a child of a 20-year-old, a parent of a 20-year-old living in Israel, I would just if I had the choice, I'd much rather they don't serve in the army than that they do serve in the army. Because if you serve in an army, you can come to harm and damage. But there's honor in serving in your country, and so obviously you have to weigh everything. Of course, every family would say, I'd much rather you do this than that. So the honor and the duty and in the case of in Israel, if you're a citizen, the obligation. If you don't have a deferral, you go to jail. You know, they'll come and get you, right? So that is what we had yesterday was someone who adopted 24 such soldiers in Israel whose family rejected them because they wanted to serve in the army.
And then he got in an accident. He would have gotten out just because he got hurt. And if his father came to the hospital, he might have decided, maybe I should opt out.
Yeah, so...
But it was more than just disapproving, as you're telling his parents. I mean, there was abuse in the situation. It's also disownership, and it's a...
The kid told me his father's birthday was a few months ago, and he spent 600 shekel. That's not a small amount of money for someone like that.
That's $150. That's huge.
It's $180.
That's like his month's salary, probably.
He spent 600 shekel to buy his father a birthday present. And his father still has not
acknowledged. Where's his mother?
What's interesting about the story, too, is, I mean, I think a lot of, unfortunately, children in the world are rejected by their family when they're adults for all kinds of reasons and don't have family to go back to.
Family's supposed to be the place you can always go to.
It should be, but it's
a psychological thing. A lot of adults see their children as like the extension of their arm.
He's leaving the army in 5 months.
And if they don't follow their exact path, they can't align with that.
Right. Yeah,
because they feel like when I go, I want the thing that I started to continue exactly the way I started it.
Right. Okay.
And they don't realize people are made up of unique DNA and have to have their own mission.
So he told me in 5 months he's finishing the army. Uh-huh. He said he's opening a catering business.
Uh-huh.
And he said he's going to court and try to get married afterwards. And I told him, when you get married, you send your parents an invitation. He said, of course I will. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens, but you send them an invitation.
How many Sufis does he have?
There's a bunch.
None of them talk to him?
So I try.
But is this the reason of Tarek? I'm just wondering, because the other reason that I also learned, it has something not just about leaving your father, but that Tarek didn't go on the journey. In other words, they all started together, and they stopped at some point. Both Haran and both Tarek stopped, and Avraham went on. So there's supposed to be... And that's also, he died, right? And Avraham stays in Haran for a little while on that.
Right.
Isn't that supposed to be the other meaning of Terah dying?
So it would mean he was dead to him because, you know, Avraham said, listen, I have this mission, I have to go. It seems that Avraham went twice. There's a Maimon Chazal that Avraham went, came back and went again. So and then Terah went the first time and not the second time. So that explains what's going on at the end of Noah when it says they all got up to leave Mesopotamia. It's just a very strange time to leave Mesopotamia to go to Canaan, because Canaan is now a war zone, as we find out in chapter 14, as
and
well as a famine zone.
And Mesopotamia is like rich and fertile.
Right, so it's just a strange time to be leaving.
Unless
the amazing plan is, and this is all historically borne out, this is the history of this time, is that Hashem purposely tells Avraham to leave the north to go further down to Canaan in order to change that situation.
Yeah.
Avraham's presence there would change. There was still famines, to be sure, in the time of Yitzchak. And then, look, there are famines, there are cycles of famines every 20, 30, 40 years in different places where you either overwork the land or there's a drought or whatever else. So that's what's happening in Israel, and there are trends of what people do in those times. Mm-hmm. So the question of leaving Israel in the time of famine, right? Mm-hmm. So there, here's a Gemara in Bava Basra.
Isn't it okay to leave if you have a mind to come back?
So here is the Gemara says that you have to assure that the price of food reaches a certain expense before leaving. Mm-hmm. That price of food is called in the Gemara sa'a b'sela. It means that grain is selling too great an expense. Gemara also talks about if it's available or not. You know, sometimes like in the Depression, things were very cheap, just no one had the money, right? So the Gemara gives a benchmark on the Tzadik Aleph in Maseches Bava Basra. The Gemara, however, picks on a particular time in history where someone left Israel during the time of famine. It's amazing. It doesn't pick on Avraham because that's exactly what he does, and it's what Yaakov does. But this, it just says there's a famine there, and this family picks up and just leaves right away.
Megillas Rus.
Megillas Rus. So the Gemara talks there about all the tragedies that happened to them in Megillas Rus is because they refused to stick around.
They were wealthy.
Around.
They could have helped other people, right. And they just instead, I want to save my wealth and helped it out.
Are there any hints in the story of their wealth? It would appear that the way Naomi comes back, and they all say, "Hasos Naomi," that she was a known person. That
it seems that she was an aristocrat when she left.
And well, that Chazal say because Ish, right? So fine, and plus. That statement entails some small degree of what we call in Yiddish or in German Schadenfreude. Have you heard that word? Leave it to the Germans to come up with a word like that. Schad means tragedy. Oh, it's such a Schad. Have you heard that?
Schad.
Schad. A Schad is a tragedy. So Schadenfreude, Freude, as you very well know, means to be happy. So Schadenfreude means taking happiness and joy out of someone else's tragedy.
From someone else's tragedy?
From someone else's tragedy.
The people are like...
Yeah.
Right?
You mean all the homes they took from the Jews?
Well, I mean,
in the story of Ruth, the people, when she comes
women,
back,
when she comes back, they say, "Ah, oh, here's that woman, that rich woman who left."
They're secretly happy about it.
Right.
I know, I'm just saying. So the Gemara just assumes that they were the wealthiest people in town, and they really could have stuck it out, and so it's sort of like post hoc ergo propter hoc. Everything that happens to them after this, therefore because of this.
That's what they say.
Well, that's also that's
they're
why
saying
the pasuk has a vav.
Yeah.
It's cause and effect.
Everything is cause and effect in Rus, right? So the Gemara asks if you're allowed to leave Israel during the time of famine. So what did they do wrong? So they said, well, when you're influential, you should stick it out. The captains have to stay on the ship. You're not the first to take the rowboat out.
There was a story about that, right? Where the captain abandoned.
Yeah.
But they say with that, I mean, I remember learning on this one, and it said, because they had the ability of helping everybody, they were the only ones, and they decided this, they didn't want it, and that's why they left.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And they got punished for it.
That's why they're punished for it. So that's not the case in other instances. And the question is with Avraham. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says that Avraham had 10 tests. Now we always assume he passed all 10. No, it just says he had 10 tests. I've seen some Mefarshim that say he didn't exactly pass the Akedah even.
Yeah, he did.
Right? No, no, but I'm just saying, according to most, that he did, yes. But according to some, but the question is, did he pass the test of the famine upon reaching Canaan? So Rashi says he did because he didn't complain. He just went about, all right, he told me to leave here and he told me to go there, and there is a famine. Okay, God, you have your ways. I come back and you say, God, why would you tell me to leave, to go to a place with his death and famine? He didn't complain. He just made his plan. Right? Uh-huh. Ramban says, listen to the pasuk, it's Vayira of Ba'aretz, Vayered Avram Mitzrayimah. What do you feel in that? while you're thinking about it.
Yeah, it's like cause and effect.
But
yeah, it's okay.
But,
but
from Israel to Egypt, this geographically.
Is it geographically? Yeah, okay.
But still, I hear you. I go along.
Something but, else that you're asking for.
So. While we're pursuing this, turn to page 254 in the Chavis Chumash. So, it just you get the sense that he's just going too readily. It's too quick. But he wrote Baritz Beir Adar Mitzrayim. Such a cause and effect. Such a quick. Look, I'm out of here. I feel that like he's. Yeah. Don't shut the door on your way out. He's just he's.
Don't think anything. Yeah.
Right. So Ramban, and again, we have breakfast. There's bagels and cake in front of us, and there's donuts. You know, I who are we to judge? Avram maybe he went 2 weeks without food, and he saw his wife was suffering, and his whole camp was suffering. You know, it's not for us to judge. But Ramban says, look, Avram is still Avraham. He's like Elimelech and Naomi. They're influential, not for the people around them. No one knows them yet. For us, reading the story down the line, imagine how different the history is if it says, Vayered Avram Mitzrayimah. Vayomer, Vatomer, Sarah, Avram, I'm hungry, what are we doing? Why did we come here? The food is out, let's send to another place for food. You know, I know it's dangerous. I'm putting in her mouth what the brothers tell Yaakov in yesterday's parsha, right? So instead, it just says, Vayered Avram Mitzrayimah, and Avram could have said, no, Sarah, Vayomer, Avram, Sarah. Hashem told us to go. He would not take care of us. Let's sit out the famine. He wouldn't tell us to go here to kill us. It's difficult. I know serving my God is sometimes mysterious, but let's hold out. That's just. Let's do that. Let's try. If there was a pasuk like that, then in our parsha yesterday, when they'd have faith that everything is going to turn out okay, and next week, when they find out that it's Yosef, right? Now, it's admittedly, God tells Yaakov, go down to see Yosef. He's going to take care of you. I'll be with you. I'm going to go down with you. And I'm going to go
back
out with you.
Right.
I'm going to go out with you the years later, right? Mm-hmm. Now, of course, by the time of Parshas Vayigash, this train has left the station. That station is chapter 15. Avram leaves during the famine in chapter 12. That train is known as Bris Ben Habsarim, where God tells Avraham, yes?
You're
going to
be a great nation?
Right? Mm-hmm. You should know that your descendants are going to be strangers. Their history is starting in a land that's not theirs, and they will be abused there. So I'm not saying that this is the MS of how to read Sefer Bereishis, but it's Ramban's perish. Ramban says
that
it happened because he left in chapter 12.
That's what he said.
If you had not left in chapter 12, then I would have told your grandson, Yaakov, also at a time of famine, because I told Yitzchak not to leave. I told Yitzchak not to leave. I would have told him not to leave also. Because I would have told Yaakov, Yosef is down there, right? Because the whole Yosef's,
could have gone that Yosef sent the food up.
Yeah, let him send food back.
And I'll come up to visit you. I also look at that
and
don't understand why Jacob also didn't object. Why he didn't object.
Of
going down.
But he did it first.
Well, he said because God told him to go. And besides, Zadie went. Right? Zadie went down. I know my father didn't.
Different example.
But that's all right. Sefer Bereishis, things work that way.
Avram went because God told him to, or because it was the practical thing?
No,
the practical thing to do.
But how could you be in trouble for putting in your ishtadlus? If you're in a place, we're told not to rely on miracles.
You are reading like Rashi.
There's a famine. What is
You're
he supposed
like
to
Rashi.
Do?
It's just that the Pasuk said so quickly he arrived
Ramban,
and he left.
Ramban expects
so
more.
So the Ramban says he went too quickly.
Yeah, but
he didn't try any other plans first.
He did things with zeal, though. You know, he was.
He always did things
Abraham.
Exactly.
Right. Melech. It's
and,
not.
And that's
it's not just
meritorious.
Okay, so that's the two ways to
you
read
don't
this.
Know who's right.
Ramban says. No, but by the way, there's a whole other explanation to Yetzias Mitzrayim. To Mitzrayim is atonement for Mechiras Yosef. Right, it's a whole different way of reading Sefer Bereishis. But I'm back in Ramban, and Ramban says that this story of the time we would spend in Egypt is a function of Avraham going down. So Yaakov is going to go down. If not, you would have just remained in Canaan.
I don't like sense.
Okay. All right. Now it's all settled because there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia that says we had to spend time in Egypt so we would be sensitive to the plight of the stranger. I mean, there's all kinds of things like that. So
right.
You know, it's still it's still an Indian, and it all has to do with this mitzvah of living in Israel. And then Hashem says, no, until before you get back to Israel, I want you to leave so that you're coming back in. So I just want to tell you one last Kaddish word.
God just also though felt that. I mean, he was the one that caused the Babylonian exile. Apparently, God Hashem lamented, right? When he caused the number of exiles for the Jewish people. So if Hashem felt really strongly about us being in Israel, he would have actually maintained us. In
well, yes, but we have a free
well, we
will
have
to
something that we have to
free
do that
will that ruins that plan.
But
yes.
Free will didn't help here. Yosef was no question had to be in Egypt. He had no chance. If they always say if his brothers didn't send him down, they would have created another way.
I don't know how you know that, but but what you are saying something very interesting is that when Hashem tells Avraham, Yodowa Tedak, Igeri Azarecha, the Gemara says that Hashem showed Avraham all future exiles also. Mm-hmm. Right at that time. Okay, but I just want to close with one thing. Is that when Yaakov hears that Yosef is alive, mm-hmm. right, God right away comes to him and talks to him. Something that does not appear in the whole story. Did you hear God's name in Parshas Vayeshev? Did you hear God's name in Parshas Miketz? Only where people are talking to one another. They said, why is God doing this to us? May God give you be gracious to you. But we don't see God addressing anybody in Parshas Vayeshev, Miketz, and not in Vayigash until Yaakov finds out that Yosef is alive. He's the conduit to bring down God to the world, and that conduit was not in a state of mind to bring down God. Because the Shechina lo shriya mitoch atzvus. If you are in a state of melancholy, the divine will not rest upon you.
That's why Yosef should not have been punished, saying, remember me and forget me for two more years, because he had no experience of God with him. He was in prison his whole life, and he should have been upheld as being this righteous
okay.
person.
Okay, so the Medrash says that he was punished for that, not because he used his shtablos, back to your point.
No, he didn't say Hashem's name.
But because he used
statement.
It twice. He said it twice.
Right, but why should he be accountable for that? God never spoke to him.
He went too far. He said, use your ishtablos, but don't... Like they say, use ishtablos as if they have no amunah, and have amunah as if you don't have no ishtablos. And let's do both. So here, let's just... I want to give you a very cute hint of something I saw in the Meshech Chachma. And page 254, at the bottom of the page, it says that Yosef gave the brothers all kinds of gifts to mm-hmm. take home. He was smart. He knew that these gifts will convince your father that it's me. Right? He'll come with the new the wagons. He'll come with the Egyptian wagon. You'll see that this is how did you come back with this? You won a lottery? He said, no, Yosef gave it to us. So on page 254 at the bottom of the page it says, "Vayitain lahem Yosef agalos al piparo." He gave them SUVs and Cadillacs and right. He gave them food for the way. He gave each one of them change of clothes because they ripped their clothes when they saw that the cup was in Binyamin's pouch. He gave him 300 silver pieces. It's fascinating that later on the Torah is going to say that the stam value of a slave is 30 shekel. So he gave him 300 for each one of them, the 10 of the other 10, who sold him, so he gave their share of selling him as a slave to give to Binyamin. Okay, cute for the 300. But let's see another inyan of the 300. Ula'aviv sholach kizos. Very strange. Rashi says kizos means, and for his father he sent like this. What? Asarach ha-morim nosim mituv Mitzrayim. What 10 donkeys can carry from all the wealth of Egypt. The eser asonos nosos bor v'lechem umazon. And 10 she-donkeys carrying food. Wow, 20 donkeys to give to his father, laden with the goods of Egypt. So first of all, why the... Just say he gave him lots of good things. Why do I have to be told how many donkeys? And why do I have to be told kazos? That's the most irrelevant, extraneous word in the Torah.
Well, 10 chamarim is against my 10 brothers.
Okay.
I remember there was a midrash, I read it a long time ago, but each thing symbolized a study that him and his father were doing together.
That's the Egla Rufa.
And so these were supposed to be symbols that only him and his father would have known.
If you want to tell me that, then you have to tell me how is it.
Well, I read it a long time ago.
Yeah, so, but Egla Rufa does speak about a ritual that the elders have to entail if there is a life that is lost and no one knows how it happened. So that seems to be like Yosef all these years.
You don't know what happened to him.
So when he saw the Aglarufa, so he saw the Agalos. But here Agalos means wagons. It doesn't mean calf.
Uh-huh.
What does Kizot mean?
So here I'm closing this year with the following Kiddush. How much can a donkey hold? So there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia that says, a donkey can hold 15 so'ah.
Now, it depends what it is. I mean, if it's
a saw,
it could be a lot of
saw. Stuff. Saw, mm-hmm. Saw is 144 volumes of eggs. A donkey can hold
it's valuable stuff.
15 of those. 15 times 144 eggs. That's how much weight one donkey can hold. How much? So that's 15 saw. If you take out your calculator, John, how many saw? How many saw does 20 donkeys carry?
144 times
15. No, I don't want eggs. How many saw?
15 each.
15 times 20.
Okay, it is
300.
Now the Gemara Bava Basra says that you're allowed to leave Israel if a saw sells for a seller.
Okay.
Now go back one pasuk and see how many sloim did Yosef give Binyamin?
300.
So he sent him kazos. He sent Yaakov. I'm sending you 300 saw of goods.
Okay.
Right? And I'm giving Binyamin 300 sloim. To show you that things have gotten so bad in this famine
that
you're allowed to leave Israel. So that's a Meshech Chochmah. Meshech Chochmah is so brilliant about this. That's why it says Kazos. In other words, Kazos, Yaakov, I'm giving you a hint. 20 saw, 300 slime.
Okay.
20 saw for 20 donkeys. 20 times 15 is 300. 300 and 300. Food is coming too expensive. You better get out of there. Otherwise, people are going to starve. All right? So, it's Yosef's way of saying what we started saying at the beginning of the shir. Are you allowed to leave Israel because your parents say you must? Well, everybody agrees you're allowed to leave Israel if there's a terrible famine going on. And if you have to be influential to others like Elimelech and his sons and his wife Naomi, then there might be some punishment for leaving. So Avraham, the Ramban says, Avraham, you did not have any influence on any other Canaanites, no, or anyone else going to Canaan at the time.
No, but you influenced the people that read the story.
What should we leave Israel for? It has to do with your grandson Yaakov. I admit this is very, very, very different than Rashi. very different than our sensitivities today. Who are we with a full stomach to judge Avram this
you're
way?
You're saying even if you're starving, then you shouldn't? Is that what you're saying? Like even
well,
if it's
Ramban
starving?
Said, no, you and I could leave, but we're not Avram.
Okay, but what about, is like starving equal to danger in some other way?
Yeah, Avram, maybe Avram didn't realize what influence he's having on history at this time. Ramban says every little thing Avram did has ramifications for us.
Right.
Okay. So that's the difference. Okay. We would be able to, of course, everyone sees that. But
in these days, then anyone could almost justify because it's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, Yaakov definitely has to leave because Hashem tells him to leave.
Right.
Hashem tells him. Comes to him in the vision. They tell him.
So
what the question is, why did Hashem tell him to? Because Avram did.
Right.
Avram held it out, and then Yaakov would too, along with Yitzchak.
But then
that's
sons are getting punished for him, and he's going to watch all his sheep die.
No! You have a big shot down in Egypt who's going to keep you with 20 donkeys every month.
What? Really?
Yeah, come on! No!
Who was the big shot in Egypt?
Yosef.
No, but Avraham didn't have the big shot in Egypt.
So Avraham is the big shot, is God's promise that I'm not going to tell me to leave here and die.
It's like a little lack of emunah that he brought me here for me to leave.
Yeah, so Rashi sees it your way. I'll go. You're right. Yeah.
But his sheep might be dying. I mean, there's nothing on the ground for them. You remember he went north first before he went south.
Okay.
I know, but Hashem was supposed to trust. Anyway.
You should trust in Hashem.
But don't be
supposed to have free will. But then you have to.
It would be a very interesting thing. But Avram on trial.
But
Avram on trial, and have Jessica say Rashi's opinion, and have someone else say Ramban's opinion, and see. Now that could just be because Jessica is such
a good
rhetorician, or Jessica speaks well. But and the argument is not because of who's better at debating.
Right.
Rashi or Ramban.
I'd say we'd have a hung jury.
Okay.
And we can't tell who's right.
Yes. Okay. Close with that, and we'll.